Radio at LATalkRadio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Studio City, California. And you can catch our show every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show is about informative entertainment, and it's done in a fun, upbeat improv style. And we provide you with tips and advice and resource information on how to pursue a career in show business. And we have guests that work in various professions of the entertainment industry. So that means that we will definitely have someone from a career that you are interested. Now, if you want to know who will be on the show in the future, you can visit our official Question Reality website. And that is questionreality.us, not .com, questionreality.us. And if you want to check out any of our past guests, read their bios, and listen or download any of the shows immediately, you can go directly to the LA Talk Radio website. And if you're listening to us now on the homepage, if you look up at the top, you'll see the Schedule 1 link. And we're on Channel 1 and Schedule 1 at the top of the LA Talk Radio website. Look for our show, Question Reality. It's in the time slot of Sunday at 5. You click on the link. It'll take you directly to the archive page. And that way you can find a show, check out all of our guests. And if you click play, it'll start playing immediately. There's no lag time. And you can also download us. Oh, if you click download, you right-click it, and you do save link as, you can transfer the show directly to your computer. And then listen to it at your own leisure. You can also download us from the podcast section of iTunes. If you have iTunes, you just click on podcast and you type in Question Reality Radio and you can check out our past shows. Now, we would love for you to call in and ask questions or provide comments of any guests that we have on the show, but we ask that you call in between 5:20 and 5:30. And when you call in, we take your calls directly. You don't go through a screening process. Now, if you're on the website, the call-in number is right in front of you. Again, if you're listening to us live, but just in case, you can jot the number down. It's area code 323-203-0815. And I guess I should have told you to get a pen and paper at the beginning of the show because we have lots of information for you this week on upcoming events which you're going to want to attend if you're in the entertainment business or want to be in the entertainment business. So again, if you want to call in, the number is 323-203-0815. Now, we have a fantastic guest for you. We're going to meet him in a couple minutes, James Magruder. He is a playwright, a translator, and a fiction writer. He is my very first playwright, I am very happy to say. And he was referred to me by a very good friend of mine that I used to work with in Baltimore Community Theater named Mariana Romales. And he has a website. If you want to check him out while I'm going over my upcoming events, his website address is jamesmagruder.com. That's J-A-M-E-S-M-A-G as in good, R-U-D-E-R.com. And you can peruse it and check out his latest addition to the world, which is Sugarless. Now, we have some wonderful things to tell you about in the entertainment business, but I wanted to apologize first for the encore presentation last week. We were supposed to have film director and screenwriter Casper Andreas on, but unfortunately, we had to reschedule him at the last minute. He will still be a guest on the show. However, he will be coming on Sunday, October the 24th at 5 p.m. Again, Casper Andreas will be back because I've been getting some emails. He will be on the show Sunday, October 24th at 5 p.m. I couldn't get him on any sooner. Our shows, thank goodness, they're so popular that I'm booked 6 months to a year in advance. I have no more time slots available for the year. Totally booked. I was able to squeeze him into that because my friend was scheduled for that date. So she said, ah, that's okay. You can have it. So again, Casper Andreas will be coming on Sunday, October 24th. Now, here's some exciting stuff coming up. There is May 14th in a couple days, there is an editor's lounge on May 14th, Avid 2010, which is the post NAB product lineup. It's an EVID. I can't talk. I got a cough drop in my mouth and I can't talk. It's an evening with Avid's top brass and new product demonstrations. So they're going to have a hands-on look at all the cool stuff. So if you're into editing, this is something you don't want to miss. It's at 6:30 p.m. again, May 14th, and it's at 1612 West Olive Avenue, Suite 200, Burbank. Again, 1612 West Olive Avenue, Suite 200, Burbank. RSVP is required. You want to check it out on the website and do your RSVP. It's editorslounge.com, editorslounge.com. Another thing coming up June 2nd and 3rd is the Factual Entertainment Forum. Real Screen. It's a reality pitch event in Santa Monica. Those of you who are writers know that this is like a big, 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 huge thing that happens every year. This reality pitch, it's factualentertainment.com. Factual, F-A-C-T-U-A-L, entertainment.com. Again, June 2nd, June 3rd. Go to the website. All the information is there. On June 4th through July 17th, June 4th through July 17th, the group rap presents the updated version of Baby with music by David Shire, lyrics by Richard Maltby Jr., and book by Sybil Pearson based on a story by Susan Yankovic. And it's directed and choreographed by Kate Kaplan. Again, it opens June 4th and runs Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock and Sunday at 2 at the Lonnie Chapman Theater. And that's 10900 Burbank Boulevard in North Hollywood. And if you go to the website, you can check out, you can make your reservations, you can do everything that you need to do to get the ticket. The website is thegrouprep.com. Rep.com. And a lot of people said, I am not familiar with the show. Okay, I'll tell you just a tiny little bit about it. It's like this charming, poignant, memorable musical which involves three couples. And they basically explore their relationships in light of their newly expectant parenthood, which is a perfect topic to talk about being Mother's Day today. So that would be a great little play to take your mom to, even though it'll be way past Mother's Day. Say I RSVP'd. Now, next, New Media Film Festival. Yay! Now, everybody is so confused about the new media. What's new media? You got the webisodes and you've got the streaming iPhones and the iPods and, oh, God, it's way beyond me. But you really need to get on the ball if you're an actor because you got to keep up with the new media, and this is a perfect time. They're having a New Media Film Festival June 11th through 13th, and you can celebrate the art of storytelling in the digital age, and they're going to have it's really cool because it's a unique 3D viewing pajama party. I know you're like, what is that? You know, we have some weird, whacked out things here in LA. There's nothing that we can't think of out here. So this, again, is the art of storytelling in the digital age in a unique 3D viewing pajama party. They're going to have a celebrity red carpet event. It's an opening night film shot on red. Panel discussions with Ted Shilowitz, Red Camera, Per Peterson, who is a 3D expert, Peter Jackson, we know who he is, Panasonic, Greg Reitman, Sundance winner, and that's going to be at the Downtown Los Angeles Theater, which is beautiful, as you know, this place, just to come in to the lobby, you're in awe, 251 South Main Street, Los Angeles. So if you want to find out more about it, and oh, wait a minute, I didn't even tell you the price. You're thinking, oh my God, Downtown Los Angeles Theater, oh, I'll never be able to afford that. Well, yes, you will, because it's $10 plus. I don't know what the plus means, but it says 10 plus. So don't hold me to the 10, but it says 10. Check that out, newmediafilmfestival.com. Newmediafilmfestival.com. Got to get up on the new media, people. Okay, the BANNF, which is B-A-N-N-F, World Television Festival, is coming up on June 13th through 16th. And if you want to learn out more about that, that's the BANFF2010.com, BANFF2010.com. Oh, guess what? For you writers out there, Great American Pitch Fest. Yay, it's back, and it's in Los Angeles. Great American Pitch Fest is on June 26th through 27th in Los Angeles. Go to pitchfest.com, P-I-T-C-H-F-E-S-T.com. And as you know, everyone's heard, NAPTE is back. It's N-A-T-P-E. LATV Fest, NAPTE LATV Fest. That's on July 12th through the 15th. Again, that's going to be in Los Angeles, and you want to check out their website. It's latvfest.net. And the very last thing that I have to announce for you today is The Big E, which is by Dee Wallace Stone. Now, everybody knows who Dee Wallace Stone is. You saw her in E. She was the mother of little boy E. What in the world? I can't think of the name. Oh, my God. I'm going to be in so much trouble. Dee Wallace Stone. She's a huge actress. The Steven Spielberg movie I'm going to have to ask James on this one. One of the first ones with the little alien, Phone Home. What was the name of that film? James.
E.T.
E.T. Thank you. I'm thinking E! Entertainment. Thank you. Okay, The Big E by Dee Wallace Stone. She is a Screenplay Lab member, and Dee has a new book out, and it is you can check that out on her website, officialdwallace.com, officialdwallace.com, and that is going to be it. We are finally going to get to my little darling, James Magruder. Let me tell you a little bit about him. I know everybody got the emails. It was on Twitter. It was on Facebook. It was on MySpace. It was on Craigslist. It was all over, but just in case you missed it, James Magruder is a playwright, a translator, and a fiction writer. And his stories have appeared or will appear in the Gettysburg Review, the Harrington Quarterly, Bloom, Subtropics, the Normal School, Mary, and the anthologies Boy Crazy and New Stories from the Midwest. He teaches translation, which I can't wait to talk to him about. I do not know what that means. He teaches translation and adaptation at the Yale School of Drama, where he received his doctorate. Now, how the hell impressive is that? I got my very first Yale man. If I couldn't have a Yale man to marry, I want a Yale man on my radio show. But how impressive is that? I think that Brooke Shields graduated from Yale, or it could have been the one from Silence of the Lambs. I know one of them graduated from Yale School of Drama. He received his doctorate from that. He produced translations and adaptations of works by, now wait until I butcher this, and James, you feel free to come in on this, adaptations of works by Marivaux. Correct me. Marivaux.
That was great.
Oh, wow. All right. Molière, Lesage. Is that
great.
Right?
That's
woo!
Right.
Labiche?
Yep.
Whoa! Gozzi or Gozzi?
Gozzi.
Damn, and Dickens, and they've been produced on and off Broadway across the country and in Japan and Germany. And his own plays have been staged in Baltimore, which I'm very excited because I don't know if he knows that I used to be involved with Baltimore Community Theater. Atlanta and New York, and published in the Art of the One Act, Art and Letters, and Third Coast. His writing has been supported by the Maryland State Arts Council, the New Harmony Project, the McDowell Colony, where he was named a Thornton Wilder Fellow, the U-Cross Foundation, the Blue Mountain Center, and the Jerome Foundation. He also teaches dramaturgy at Swarthmore College. We are going to find out what dramaturgy is. Oh, we got so much to learn today. He lives in Baltimore with his partner, Steve Bolton, and we're going to find out what Steve does. And the University of Wisconsin Press published his debut novel, Sugarless, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Last October, they published it. It was named one of the 20 indies to watch. Very exciting. By Publishers Weekly. Out Magazine said it should be read by every teenager, gay and straight alike. It is one of the 5 nominees for the Lambda Literary Award for Best Gay Fiction Debut. And it is a semi-finalist for the, I hope I get this right, Cobble or Cabell?
Cable.
Cable, damn. Okay.
For
the Cable, right. The Cable First Novelist Award. He is currently completing his second novel, Love Slaves, of Helen Hadley Hall. Woo! That sounds like a porn movie. I'd like to rent that. And he's working on a new play with Kathy Shapiro called Out of Egypt. That name, Kathy Shapiro, sounds so familiar with me. Is she involved in Baltimore Community Theater?
She's in Baltimore, but not with the Community Theater. She's in a prior iteration. She's a Broadway producer, and she's written a play.
Why does that name sound so familiar to me? There's so many Kathy Shapiros. I may be just getting
that confused. Might be it.
You know what I'm saying? Welcome, James Magruder.
Hey, Priscilla.
Woo!
Wow, I feel like my life is flashed by in front of my eyes. All that biography.
Wow, and that was only 2 little paragraphs. I think you had like 4, 5, maybe 6 possible paragraphs. I had to condense you. You're too impressive, James.
Just too full of myself.
Well, you should be. You are so impressive. I mean, I can't even understand the whole Yale School of Drama. How the hell did you get in? Did your parents buy you in?
Well, you know, wasn't it Sharon Stone who said you can only sleep your way to the middle? I got into Yale for French literature and then switched over to the drama school when I discovered there was a spot in the theater for an egghead like me. I grew up, like, performing, and I became a show queen as a teenager, part of what Sugarless is about. And then I became a dramaturg because of Speech Team. So, and then Yale.
James, let's take it back to... let's go out of the womb, but still in out of the diapers, and let's talk about your first cognitive thoughts. What did you want to do when you first had thoughts of growing up? What did you want to do? What did you want to be?
Well, the first thing I said I wanted to be was a plumber, which horrified my parents.
Are you kidding me?
You know, but nobody's asked me this question, Priscilla. I wanted to be a plumber, and then I wanted to be a stockbroker, and then I wanted to be a doctor. And I got a copy of Grey's Anatomy for my 8th grade, you know, birthday present. But then I discovered that I discovered the theater, and I also wanted to be a writer because I think I was growing up in a family where all the kids were, you know, we moved around a lot, suburb to suburb, my parents divorced, and so to get attention out of my family, one day in 6th grade I wrote an essay, and the teacher said to my mother, this kid's writing at a college age level, and that was it. And I thought, oh, well, my goodness, I'm getting, you know, affirmations for something. So anyway.
What? Well, wait a minute. I'm still fascinated with you wanting to be a plumber. That's the first time I've ever heard of that. What turned you on to the whole plumber scene?
It was probably a hot-looking plumber in a television commercial, of course, in 1966. I thought, I want to be that, or I want to be with that. No, but they were horrified. I mean,
I see that plunger, and I'm talking about things that I could do with that.
Yeah, that plunger. It was the plunger. Yeah. No, this is not to discount the very valuable work that plumbers do all across this land of ours.
Absolutely, and how much they get paid, my God.
And how much they get, right. That's like, you know, a union job. So, but plumber was not in the cards for me.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to go to college.
That's the first time I'd ever heard it. I mean, usually when you ask kids, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a fireman. Never in my lifetime I've ever heard anyone say plumber. So you have already started out so unique to me. I knew you were special. If I would have asked you as a child and you said plumber, I would have known you were going to turn out to be a special one for sure.
Well, you know, I think I've just outed myself as a plumber wannabe. I've never said that aloud to anybody but my parents.
People listening to this show.
Now everybody knows.
You are not going to live it down. You're going to be getting plungers for your birthday.
Right, right. Wrenches.
Lucky, somebody might show up with dressed as a plumber, but with not all of the cloth around.
That's
it's
right.
So
right.
You never know.
To fix my pipes, right.
There you go.
That's so dirty, Priscilla.
This could be a good thing for you, James, for sure.
Yes.
Now, you moved around a lot. Is that because your parents were in the armed forces?
No, my dad just didn't like it. You know, he was trying to climb the ladder of corporate success. He was kind of like a madman in the early 60s in New York, and he worked for the dairy industry. So I got five or six schools, and I developed a sense of humor to protect myself from bullies and stuff, because I, you know, language and telling jokes became a way to, not have people pick on me or give me a pink belly in gym class. So I developed a very mean wit that I still sometimes comes in handy. But now, you know, now I throw shade in different ways. But, when I was a kid, it was like, you know, I was verbally mean, and I put it into my writing.
Well, that happened, especially in the 70s. Now, you said show music was very important to you in the 70s. What kind of show music were you talking about?
Well, show music, I mean, Broadway. I was a show queen, so like at the age of 15, and this happened, you know, again, Sugarless, this novel, is my first novel, is very autobiographical. I was in like 1975, and I was watching TV with my family, and that was the year of A Chorus Line in the original production of Chicago, and I watched the Tony Awards without really knowing what theater was, and like the hair stood on the back of my neck up when they did the finale from A Chorus Line, and so the next week I spent my allowance on the album to A Chorus Line, and the next week after that Chicago, then Grease, Follies, Pippin, and you know, before, you know, now I have like 300 of them. It's a classic, you know, there's something in gay, little gay boys, something in our DNA. There's the show queen DNA, there's the opera DNA, there's the Judy Gar, you know.
Yeah.
The show queen thing hit me. So that's what I mean by, you know, show music.
Fantastic. Now, give us some coming of age stories. You have any good coming of age stories?
Well, that would be Sugarless. When I was a sophomore in high school, there's this famous gay play from the 60s called The Boys in the Band. And I don't know if any of your listeners ever did Speech Team. I know they have it in California because I have friends who did it in California in the 70s, like Tim Miller, for example. And they gave me 8 minutes of this gay play, Boys in the Band, to do competitively. Like, you know, Gleed has show choir. I also did show choir. So in the book and in my life, I was given these 8 minutes of the Boys in the Band to do, and I started winning tournaments, and my competitive spirit was unleashed. And so I'd go from week to week trying to cream other little 15-year-old boys and girls dressed in their Sunday best to win tournaments and valuable prizes. But the old, and in the book, this didn't happen in real life. This 16-year-old boy falls, starts to have an affair with an older speech coach from another school. So there's lots of, you could say Sugarless is a young adult novel with scene after scene of intergenerational gay sex scenes, which keeps it off of Oprah, but not off Priscilla's show. So far. But you might have to shut me down.
I'm ready for it to be put in film already. Forget the book for me. I want to see some hot, sweaty men.
There certainly has been film interest, but
that's what we have to do, James. We have a lot of people that are listening to the show who are film directors, and hey, if anybody wants to talk to James Magruder, read the book, and then if you're interested, there you go. We're gonna fly out here and do lunch and all that stuff and stick sushi down your throat. And
well, maybe it'll be better than when in 2001 I was flown out to meet Tom Hanks to discuss making a musical out of That Thing You Do. And what I remember most about that meeting is a $27 bowl of granola I had in Santa Monica for breakfast on Playtone's dime. That was really fun. Someday I'll write a story about that, when I met Tom Hanks.
When I think
of all the money I spent on the outfit I was going to wear for this pitch meeting.
What happened? That sounds like a great story. How did that come to be?
Well, that came to be because a friend of mine, that same Kathy Shapiro, thought they were thinking about making a stage musical version of That Thing You Do, that, you know, Tom Hanks' film from about, I think that's like 1995, a wonderful film. And they thought, well, this should be a stage musical. So they were looking around for higher book writers, and that's something I do. And so I got this call from Des McAnuff, who used to run the La Jolla Playhouse when I worked out there. And Des and I met with Tom Hanks and, Gary Getzman, his producing partner. And I was like, yeah, we had a great meeting. Tom was really great. I was really nervous. And it was like, okay, let's go. Write a treatment, write a script. But then everything bogged down because in the film business, you're a writer for hire. Not in the theater business, you own your property. So that's changed a little bit since 2001. But at the time, they just couldn't come to contract for it, and I wasn't willing to, like, give everything, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I got a great $27 bowl of granola because they put me up in Santa Monica on the beach, and I got to shake Tom Hanks' hand.
And wow!
I got Christmas cards from Playtone for 2 years after that.
Isn't that nice?
But That Thing You Do never was made into a stage musical, and Des McAnuff went on to do Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
That was my last time that was the first time I was ever wooed in any fashion by.
Well, hopefully you're going to get wooed again, and the granola has gone up to $57.49 now, so be prepared for that, okay? Now, I'm going to ask you something. A lot of people want to know, what is the difference between writing for the stage versus writing fiction?
Well, writing for the stage, everything has to be done completely through dialogue and sort of subtext. So I wrote plays for a long time before I wrote fiction, and I will say there's things that are easier to do in playwriting and fiction. So, fiction, I have to write, it's all me, so Sugarless. So, or you have to write the sentence like, she crossed the room and opened the door. Now, you don't have to do that in a play. The director takes care of that. Or in fiction, you have to write, chestnut curls framed her pale oval face. Mm-hmm. In the theater, you don't have to do that. That's the actress. So blocking. So what all of it is the dialogue. Now it's harder to do some things in theater because you have to keep suspense going and conflict and scene, and then what happened, and then, you can be more long-winded like this answer in fiction.
But you write the stage directions.
Well, you write some of them, but really, a really decent director always sort of crosses out the stage directions. and a bad playwright will put them in, and a bad playwright will put before every single line of dialogue, anxiously, upset, hurt, wounded, happy, those little emotional indicators that really should be in the dialogue or the scene.
I'm glad you brought that up. As a playwright, being from the East Coast, there's one mentality. Like when I got started in theater, I was always taught, you do not ad lib to the playwright's words in a play. And that's just the way I was taught. I had an aunt that used to be an actress on Broadway in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s. And I mean, that was, you know, something that you just live by. Now, you know what happened out here, James? When I came out here and I was directing a play down in, I'm not going to say which one it was, but it was down in Hermosa Beach. And I was like, oh my God, they were ad-libbing and adding their words and adding scenes. And I just could not believe that they did that. And when I said something to them, they looked at me like I was crazy. And they said that it's the norm for them to do that. And that it's very, as a matter of fact, the lead actress had said that because I came in on the project because the original director got a part on a soap opera and I took over. So the play had already been cast. And the lead actress said to me, oh, you don't even want to know when I told them I wanted to do an energy circle. And you know how we do that on the East Coast?
Yeah.
Oh my God, they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, we do our things in the car. I'm like, well, you'll be doing an energy circle today and I'll show you how to do it. But they added words and things. Now, my question to you as a playwright, how do most playwrights feel about that?
Oh, well, you know, again, this goes right back into the Hollywood versus, you know, owning your own work. Of course, film actors or people who are trained in the screen businesses would, you know, things you make it up on set. You know, the writer is the lowest person on the totem pole on a film set. They aren't necessarily even there for shooting. And so if you have stars or it's like, let me say it this way. And you can take 15 takes and then you'll splice together. So like the writer's words are just a blueprint. In the theater, though, the writer's words are sacrosanct.
Right.
And so you don't make stuff up.
Right. This is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to direct a stage play here, and they're adding words.
Yeah.
And
so, you know, if the playwright were alive and were around, he could, you know, close you down. Who was your aunt, by the way, who acted on Broadway?
Her name was Eva Swin, and she was in Hair, and she was in Oklahoma, and she was in many different plays, And we'll talk about that. Now, I'm 5:32. We're running short. I want to get Sugarless in, but I want to get a couple more things in about giving advice. How hard is it to get a book published?
Well, I think in the end, getting a book published is harder than getting a play on because there are like 15 major publishers and they all have different imprints. And, you know, if you get rejected by one imprint, you're rejected by all the other ones. It's just tough. Now, there are a lot of indie presses out there, and actually Sugarless is by University of Wisconsin Press, which you would consider an academic or an independent press. I just think it's harder to get you have to find an agent, and you have to be prepared to face a lot of rejection. The theater, though, on the other hand, every major city in the country has theaters from, you know, as high as the Mark Taper Forum to like little, guest equity contracts to community theater. There are always places for playwrights to hear a play aloud. And if you don't go to a theater, if you don't have your own theater, you can always invite your friends to read it aloud and you can hear it and you can make it better. And, you know, but you really can't do that with a book of fiction. You know, you can workshop things to death, but you don't know what you have. In the theater, you can always hear it. You know,
right.
Provided you have enough friends and a gallon of wine.
Yeah, for sure. Now, with getting a book published, I know that I have a friend I have many friends who are writers, and most of them have what's called their rejection board. And they have a big cork board up on the wall, and they send their, I'm thinking film synopsis, but
Query letters, yeah.
They send it out, they get rejected, they put their letters up on the wall. How do you feel about that?
Oh, putting them on the wall is a badge of mine. I have a folder. It's called correspondence/rejections. But see, because I send out short stories, too. I just got two rejections today, one by email and one by conventional mail. They just grow and grow and grow. You just have to have a tough skin. But I think this is true of the film business. I wouldn't presume to know. In books, all you really need is that one person who loves it, who has enough power to say, we'll do it. I suppose you need to green light it. It's just like one person at the right place So who shares your sensibility, who shares your vision, who shares, you know, like, just can't put your book down. So I found somebody, you know.
But your words
was rejected at 25 places before, you know.
So you just got, what are your words for people who get rejected? What is some couple words to keep them inspired?
Wow, I don't know if I have a couple words, but I would say you have to persevere. You have to know how to take criticism. If six people are telling you the same thing, they are probably right. And I will say in the theater, Harold Clurman once famously said, individually, every audience member is wrong about what's wrong with your play, but collectively, the audience is always right.
Mm.
I don't know if that's really advice, but it sounded fun.
Sounded good at the time.
Yeah, you have to persevere. You have to believe in yourself. You can never, ever, ever give up.
What would you say if you had to name three characteristics that a person needs to have in order to, as you say, persevere? What would you say that they were in order to be a playwright, a successful playwright, and also a successful publisher?
Well, I think you have to be resilient, you have to be flexible, and you have to be collaborative.
Mm.
Collaborative more for the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Flexible means you have to be able to move on to the next thing. You can't perfect the same 15-page story for 2 years in center. You have to always be moving on to the next thing.
I know people who do that.
Yeah. Oh, here's this play I wrote in 1943, and it's still, if I just do one more reread, you have to know when to let it go. When to set it aside. Well, I think 45 rejections might tell you something.
Yeah, that's good.
And you also, I think I also say for any writers out there, read your work aloud or have it read aloud. And
be open to rejection. Everybody gets rejection. More a rejection is good, because that means that somebody's actually taking time to be honest with you. You know, a lot of people are like, oh my God, that's so great. Oh, that sounds good. And you're not really getting the scoop. I mean, come on.
Right.
I actually appreciate rejection and constructive criticism more than I do compliments personally, because I trust a person who's constructively more critical. I do personally.
Right.
Now, let's talk about Sugarless. Now, it's a finalist in the 2010 Lambda Literary Award and in the category Gay Debut Fiction. Tell us about that.
Well, I'd say, it's exciting to be nominated. I've won things in the past, but this is the first time I've ever, had to practice my, oh, it's just an honor to be nominated speech. It needs work, let me tell you. And actually, just last week, it was shortlisted for the 2010 William Saroyan International Writing Prize, which I'm excited about because I'm just not in there with, gay men. I'm in there with women and short story writers and straight people and people writing in English over in England and South Africa. So it just means to me, wow, this isn't a bad book. To be modest.
And also Indie Top 20 Publishers Weekly.
Yeah, no, it's all,
Chicago Sun-Times Review.
Yeah.
And I mean, so this is exciting. So
it
if you
exciting.
Had to sum up what Sugarless was about in, say, a couple sentences.
The pitch sentence? Okay.
Why do we want to read Sugarless?
I have the noble pitch. I have the high road. The high road is it's about a child who loses a parent to a belief system. The low road is it's about Jesus, sex, and speech team, or my sophomore year of high school.
Mm.
And I would say both roads are true.
Mm.
So there you have it.
So is it something that it's something for everyone? If you were a heterosexual person, you could read it, enjoy it. It spans all classes of people, all nationalities. I mean, if you're an Indian person from India, you could read it. I mean, there are things in it that you're going to be able to relate to.
You know, ideally, you know, the more specific a piece of art is, the more it can be universal. So it's for everybody, Priscilla, and it's about
for everybody, honey. Everybody,
it's for everybody.
With the Sugarless Train. Yeah,
yes, that's right.
I love the name of being a person, Sugarless Gum, which
right.
is so lame. But I just, as soon as I saw that name, I thought, wow, that's brilliant. And then you put the Sugarless Gum on there, and I said to Mary, I sent Mariana Romales an email. I said, I love the name of this book and how I put the little stick of gum there. I mean, that. Where did you come up with that? I mean,
well, that's the design department at University of Wisconsin.
Oh.
You know, they gave me two cover choices, and the gum was great, and the other one was so bad, I just knew that they wanted me to pick the gum. It's like, as they say in showbiz, be prepared to love this when it's, you know, when you have... you know, you haven't cast the role and you have 3 minutes left and the last part, be prepared to love her.
Right.
Who comes in. So anyway.
Well, I love it. I think it's very catchy. And I think we can call the film that he's going to do, Sugarless.
Sugarless.
People out there who want to take this book and turn it into a film. I don't know why I'm pitching it. Maybe it's because I'm going to say, oh, I want a part in there. All right. You also do short fiction.
Mm-hmm.
How exciting is that?
Well, it's actually short stories are harder to write, I think, than a novel because they're just so compressed, and I still have problems with it. But I'm always really, you know, I'm more thrilled by getting a short story accepted than I was in having a musical on Broadway. So
mm-hmm.
It's just it's fun.
Now, have you done stuff on Broadway, right? What have
mm-hmm.
you done on Broadway?
I wrote a book for a musical called The Triumph of Love, which starred Betty Buckley and F. Murray Abraham and Susan Egan, that ran for 4 months on Broadway in 1996. And that was just
exciting. Exciting.
Yeah,
now, you do what's called translations. For people who don't know what that is, what is that? What is translation?
Well, think of what's one of your favorite books in a foreign language?
Can't read a foreign language.
No, okay, well, you know, War and Peace or The Red and the Black or Madame Bovary, they're originally written in other languages. Or, you know, The Cherry Orchard by Chekhov was originally written in Russian.
Uh-huh.
So I teach a class at the Yale School of Drama in which students are required to translate a play from another language into English. And because I know French, German, Italian, and Latin, or I can read it enough, then I help them bring their translations into English.
God, you are so super scary. I can't even, like, talk to you now. You've totally shut me down.
No.
You are too much in the future for me. You are
Let's talk about plumbing again. No,
yes, I think we need to take it back to basics with you.
Take it down a notch.
Now you've totally intimidated me, James Magruder. Who knows these things? I don't even know these things. That's probably why you got into Yale.
I'm just so freaking smart. Yeah, I had a brain transplant.
So
you
could probably read how to do it and then do it like 5 minutes later.
Oh, there's not a lot I can, you know. No, actually, the thing is, Priscilla, there's very few things. I'm a totally unspontaneous person, and if I can't do something well, I don't do it all, which means all I do is write. And I feel like I'm Lovey Howell on Gilligan's Island. It's like, Thurston, what does one do to, you know, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, that's so good.
I am Lovey Howell.
You are Lovey Howell. Well, you're my Lovey Magruder.
Oh.
Now, you do theater translations and you do recordings too. So do you do them in voices when you do the...
Oh, what recording? What are you talking about, Priscilla? No, I don't do record. Oh, my no-no hole just slammed shut.
You've got a pretty significant resume here. I mean, my God, you've got 9 rooms worth, A Place at the Table, Penelope in the Sterile Field, My Holiday from Hell, Diaphorus. I don't know.
Oh, wow. It sounds like you're looking at my website.
I'm looking at the information that I have collected.
Oh, you come up with more than even my horrendously long bio.
The Miser by Molly Air.
Well, the thing is, you know, I didn't really reveal this, but I'm actually 97 years old, so I've had a long time.
Well, you look damn good for 97 years old. For God's sake.
Well,
you know,
work.
And you did.
It's the vajazzling.
You did 3 French comedies. You're just so impressive. It's like you weren't meant for this world, James. It's like you're like an alien, for God's sake. Well, tell us, what could you say? We've got 5 minutes. I want it to be all about you. I want you to tell us what you want to happen with Sugarless. Tell us anything you want to tell us in the last 5 minutes of this show.
5 minutes. Wow, no callers. I've scared them off.
Sugarless. Well, I think you would be interested if someone showed interest to adapt it into a screenplay. That's something.
Oh, sure. Or you know, I have a friend who thinks it should be a television series or a television series on HBO AMC. Because the thing is about. It's teenagers in competition. So these speech competitions, it's like Glee. It's like the Spelling Bee movie. It's like the Spelling Bee musical. It's like the Mad Hot Ballroom. Kids, America never gets over high school, so we're all trapped in high school. And so it's these competitive teens are like a significant feature in contemporary culture. So it's like, well, here's Speech Team. Here's a brand new way to pit our 16-year-old selves against one another. So, it'd be fine. I would certainly love for it to be a movie. Could it
even go the route of the play?
No, there are too many kids, and like there's just too much. There's too much sex in it. I think
too much. Wow. What now? Have
well,
you
the kid's
ever
15.
Of,
the kid's yep. 15. It's like he'll get an erection over any. He gets an erection going on the school bus.
The wind blows.
That's true. Priscilla, if you ask some of your other male guests, they would all tell you that when they were 15, they would get hard just by being in a moving car. It isn't even about.
You know, they say that. I just don't get that. But that's like a whole different topic.
I hate to say it, but it is a guy thing.
It's true, really.
It's a guy thing. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought of pitching that to Logo TV Network?
Well, here's another weird thing, Priscilla. I don't own a television. I know what Logo is, but I've never seen. I know that's. I shouldn't even say this, but I don't own it. I do watch some shows sometimes online. Sometimes I'll rent seasons of things, but I don't even know what's on Logo right now.
Okay. Well, yeah.
So I just lost the Logo vote.
Well, you know what it is. So it's gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Okay. It's a fantastic show. They have so many shows that really are just. You can watch thousands of the Logo videos and the full episodes online. And I think that based on what you're telling me your book is about, that this would be a perfect venue for
Oh, yeah. No, that would be great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Anybody who works at Logo, I think I know a couple of people. But anyone who wants to buy your book, where can we get your book, James McGrew?
I'd say it's easy. Spotting it in a bookstore is like spotting a snow leopard. pretty rare. But so I would just say go online, either through my website or through Amazon.com. And Skylight Books in West Hollywood might have it, or Silver Lake might have it.
Okay.
Since it's up for a Lammy Award, I think they stock them when they get around to that. So I'd go online for it.
Well, I need to get a copy, but I want an autograph copy. So I will pay you for the book, but I want you to send me a copy.
Well, I might be at the Los Angeles Book Fair in the fall, so I'll meet you up there and I'll sign it.
That would be great, but I need you to always sign it.
I'll be there, and then we can have a $38 bowl of granola in Santa Monica and charge it to Tom Hanks.
That's right. You got to sign it, Priscilla. You're hot and happening.
Okay, well, listen, you're hot and happening, Priscilla.
Well, I just want to tell you that I think, I mean, for you being like so superiorly inferior superior intellectually, you have dumbed yourself down for this show in a fantastic manner. Thank you for it.
I'm a really hot 93-year-old. No, thanks for having me. No, high culture, low culture. It's the stuff in the middle I can't stand. So give me Will Ferrell or give me War and Peace.
Oh,
great talking to you.
And I want to thank thank you so much. You're a fantastic guest, great sense of humor. Please buy Sugarless. Check it out, Amazon.com, or go to his website, jamesregruder.com.
You'll be glad you did. You'll be glad you did.
You'll be glad you did. Exactly.
Right.
He's a wonderful, wonderful person, as you can all tell. He is so super talented, and I think you can read some of his stuff on his website, some of his short
stories. Oh, yeah, the first chapter is on the website, so if you
that,
there's and another short story. Yeah, you can read,
Yeah, so go to his website, jamesregruder.com, and read the first chapter, and then run out and get the second, get the rest of the chapters in a book. Thank you so much, James Regruder. God bless you.
Thanks so much. Okay.
And contact me when you're coming out to L.A., okay?
All right, I will.
Oh, and I'll hook you up with a hot boy and some boy butter. Oh, but Steve will be there. Never mind, I didn't say that.
And a plumber. Right. Oh, my no-no hole just slammed shut.
I love you, Steve. We'll get you a point.
All right.
Honey, bye.
Bye. Got that in there twice.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.